Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. This is a program that's devoted to the fastest growing segment of our society. To those of you like me who know that there is something dreadfully wrong, even destructive, about the religious and political institutions that are destroying our country. There's something dreadfully wrong that cannot be fixed in media reporting, military invasions, and counterproductive economic schemes. We realize that the institutions that have made this mess are indeed the problem. They're not the solution. So instead of simply tossing one set of bums out and trying to reestablish sanity with another set, we realize that we are not going to solve the problems that ail this country and indeed much of the world by restacking the deck chairs on our Titanic. Therefore, instead of merely presenting the news, our mission here is to understand what is causing the tragedies that are besieging our planet, all while predicting how these events will influence our world over the next 5, 10, and 15 years. And because there is hope, individual hope, family hope, in our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through evidence and reason, since His guidance regarding His covenant provides hope, the only reliable response in an exceedingly troubled world. If you'd like to participate in this discussion, if you'd like to expand your understanding of the world that we live in, we'd encourage you to do so. It's toll-free, 877-300-7645. We're going to keep our attention focused on America's completely inappropriate response to the Syrian civil war, and we're going to do so in a moment. But there are other issues that are plaguing our planet, and I don't want us to lose sight of them just because the most egregious issues are taking place in Washington and Damascus. This news item came across the news wire earlier this morning. It is an extraordinarily important revelation. You see, the European Union tried to impose what they called a Robin Hood tax. The Robin Hood tax was, of course, designed to steal money from those who were productive, from those who had earned it, and to give it to those who wanted it. It's based on the same concept of progressive taxation in America and many places around the world. Let's punish success and let's reward failure, because when we do so, there'll be fewer successful people, which means that there'll be more unsuccessful people. And because of the scheme that we're creating, the more unsuccessful people there are, the more people we will have that are dependent upon us. And if they are dependent upon our Robin Hood schemes, we will be able to control them. They will be so easily malleable that they will actually, in a vast majority, vote us into power. Because they, like we, will have no moral backbone or fiber whatsoever. They will think that it's appropriate. They will think that this concept that we will market under everybody should pay their fair share, when in fact the vast majority of people don't make any contribution and are net parasites, they'll think that is grand, moral, enlightened. So this tax, which aimed to discourage risk-taking by taxing transactions of shares of currencies and bonds. So if you wanted to exchange your currency for another currency, if you wish to buy shares of stock and invest in business, if you wanted to purchase bonds. You'd be taxed as a transaction tax. So those who had already been taxed and had saved some money after the government had confiscated its apportionment, that you'd be taxed again, not on profits, just on transactions. The FTT, the financial transaction tax, which was known as the Robin Hood tax, was set to be adopted by 11 European states, but not by the United Kingdom. But the legal document claims that the transaction tax exceeds member states' jurisdiction for taxation under the norms of international customary law. It was ruled unconstitutional, if you will, for the European Union. Now, didn't stop the European Union for trying to impose it, just as it doesn't stop the United States from routinely imposing laws that are opposed to the U.S. Constitution. Every time the U.S. puts another law on its books, infringing on Americans' rights to keep and bear arms, every time the United States spends another dime spying on the American people without reasonable search and seizure, as they do in the NSA, these are great examples of a nation ignoring its own constitution to control its people. That is what happened in these 11 European states, but a court says, no, you have no basis for doing that. Now, that didn't stop them in the first place. Now, the reason you should be concerned about this, yes, this is 11 European Union countries, ultimately stopped by the UK. So why should we in America, if that's where you're listening to the show, and I recognize that a very significant percentage of the of those of you who listen to the show on a regular basis don't live in the United States. But why should someone who is listening in New Zealand or Australia or in South America, Canada care? Because the same kind of manipulative schemers of controlling demagogues that are trying to impose this Robin Hood tax in the 11 European Union countries would have imposed it in the United States if they got by with it there. In fact, there they will come up with a new version of it that they think will pass muster with the courts. And when they're successful there, it will be imposed here or wherever you might live. This is the New World Order. They are going to do everything they can do to control your pocketbook. They've done everything they can to destroy the value of the currency, to destroy the economies, because as they destroy the currency, as they destroy the economy, these manipulative types make more and more people dependent, and the more people that are dependent, the easier it is for them to control everyone. This non-binding opinion adds that the plan infringes upon the taxing competencies of non-participating member states. The BBC World News economics correspondent said that the country's concern can press ahead, as this is just a legal opinion, but it is a warning that they could risk losing if they were to end up in court. Quote, this legal opinion is a very serious setback for the 11 countries' plans. By the way, the 11 countries, so that you know who they are, that wanted to impose a Robin Hood tax so that individuals were now taxed on just exchanging financial transactions, buying stocks, not profits on buying stocks, just buying stocks, buying bonds, changing one currency out for another. The 11 countries that wanted to impose the Robin Hood tax, they were Germany, France, Italy, Spain, Belgium, Austria, Portugal, Greece, Slovenia, Slovakia, and Estonia. UK ministers fear that it could be imposed on British firms trading in the European Court of Justice. The City of London could be hit by the tax, for example, if a British firm trades with branches of its French or German banks based in the capital. The British government would be forced to collect the tax, but would not be allowed to keep it. I have another item in the financial news that I'd like you to consider as we move towards the New World Order, which will be perpetrated primarily on a financial basis. Yes, we recognize the threat of Islam, probably better than and more than anyone else. And yes, we recognize the threat of having a military state, as we do now in America. But the primary threat, the thing that is most going to, or going to play the biggest role in unraveling life as we know it, is economic schemes. America and most of the world are famously bankrupt. America is $17 trillion in debt. The President of the United States just said that his reduction of the deficit was the greatest reduction in 60 years. When in fact, over the first 5 years of his presidency, the national debt has grown from $10 trillion to $17 trillion. But that, according to him, was the largest percentage decrease in the national debt. Well, our national debt isn't just $17 trillion. It's really over $45 trillion, could be over $60 trillion because of unfunded mandates. You know, if you have a promise to pay, a promissory note to pay Social Security and Medicare and retiree benefits and pensions for retirees and ongoing health care and for retirees, and then with military and government workers, pensions beyond that, then those are all debts if they're unfunded. And in the case of America, all of those things are unfunded. Therefore, our real debt is five or six times our gross domestic product, making America, both by percentage and in aggregate, the most indebted nation on earth. You know, the President of the United States recently said that America was the most prosperous nation on earth. The opposite is true. America is by far the most indebted nation on earth, both as a percentage of its economy, when you consider the unfunded mandates, which are very real. Ask the folks in Detroit. And also when you consider the aggregate amount of our debt. We'll return to Shattering Myths and one more financial story before we turn to the military. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I want to share another story that is a financial background with you before we move to some comments about the American military, since so many in Congress and the President of the United States thinks that the American military should be used to punish an international leader. Do you recall the famous 47% of households don't pay federal income tax statement that was used by Romney, quietly, surreptitiously taped by a campaign worker associated with Obama? So here's Obama doing what Richard Nixon was ultimately thrown out of office for, which is surreptitiously going into someone else's campaign headquarters. This time it was a campaign fundraiser, and going in under false pretenses and then doing something which is not considered legal, which is recording someone's private conversations, and then they play them. Well, Romney made an accurate statement. He said 47% of American households don't pay federal income tax. And it was that statement that ultimately turned the election, because it was so twisted by the media and by Obama himself that should never have had the take. Well, now the center that made the 47% finding known way back in 2009 said that that has dropped a few percentage points, mainly because of the fact that when Congress approved the tax increase that Obama wanted, taking the tax rate on individuals and private businesses up from 35% to 39%, they also canceled the payroll tax that had been a had been wiped off the slate during the Bush era. So there was a tax abatement of payroll taxes by during the Bush administration that was reimposed, which is why now a slightly higher percentage of Americans don't pay federal tax. Well, what's interesting here is that the statement was true. The statement is still true. It's within a few percentage points of 47%. And yet, the candidate's comments that he said that 47% of Americans depend on government, and they think that it's the government's responsibility to care for them, and they will vote for this president no matter what. That is the reality. It is what Jefferson warned us about. It is what Franklin warned us about. We have become the menace that they were so concerned about. And that is why there is no hope in America of salvaging the nation. It cannot be salvaged economically because too many Americans have become dependent on government and will continue to vote for Robin Hood policies. Now, I'm going to share some statements from Thomas Jefferson regarding the military. And I'm going to share this with you because this whole issue in Syria has revolved around America's ability to break countries. We're really good at regime change. We're really good at bombing countries from afar. Our drones can kill anybody, anywhere, at any time. And our cruise missiles are a wonderful way of allowing America to go and show shock and awe at a distance. We have become lethal without personal responsibility. And because we have this military, one larger than the rest of the world combined, unfortunately, we are prone to use it. And we consistently use it to make bad situations worse. We used it to make a bad situation worse in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Libya, and now we're poised to make a bad situation worse in Syria, although it appears that the Russians have finally trumped us. And it's my view that if America did not have a military, but simply enabled the Second Amendment, just simply said, you know, the Second Amendment was written for a specific reason, that it was essential to a free society to have their citizens keep and bear arms, all types of arms. These were the very arms that were considered appropriate to private militias, that was the way to ensure freedom, not only from your government, but freedom from invasion. And if America would simply honor its Second Amendment, we wouldn't need a military because it would be impossible for any country to invade and occupy this nation. Now, when we return to Shattering Myths, I'm going to share with you what Thomas Jefferson said about standing armies, recognizing that America's is the largest in the world. Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have some quotations here now from Thomas Jefferson regarding the two topics that we have been discussing. One is currency manipulation and financial malfeasance, and the other is military malfeasance. We also have Larry on the line, who's in a position to comment on these statements. Let me begin first with Thomas Jefferson's statement regarding private banks. At the time, there were no nationalized banks. There were no central banks. Had there been central banks, I am quite certain he would have used the term central bank, which he would have been vehemently opposed to. If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, which ultimately we allowed a central bank, the Federal Reserve, to do that, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all of their property until the children wake up homeless on a continent that their fathers conquered. I believe that banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies. The issuing power should be taken from the banks and restored to the people to whom it properly belongs. Thomas Jefferson. Now, when Thomas Jefferson wrote that, he said that the two most dangerous things, the only thing that was more dangerous than a standing army, was the bank's ability to manipulate currency by inflation and deflation. Inflation is caused by the Federal Reserve creating more money. It is simply they devalue the currency, creating inflation by creating a larger monetary supply. And deflation occurs when they contract that monetary supply. That is how these things occur. And what Thomas Jefferson correctly assumed, if the American people ever allow a central bank to do that, it's over for our country. They will, over a period of time, destroy all of the value that the people themselves have created. 1913, the central bank was legislated into existence as the Federal Reserve. The federal income tax was legislated into existence with the progressive tax system. And now, since 1913, it's been 100 years. In 100 years, they have destroyed 98% of the value of our currency and have taken a once vibrant economy, the world's greatest, and ultimately destroyed it, making us the most indebted nation on earth. He was right. Any comment on that, Larry, before I move to what Mr. Jefferson had to say about standing armies?
No, I other than to say that the central banking system is the fifth plank in the Communist Manifesto.
Yes, it is.
And the fourth plank
is progressive income tax.
Sure. And it was exactly 10 years after the establishment of the Federal Reserve Board that they established the CFR with the help of MI5.
Right. And the third plank, by the way, is eminent domain, which the Supreme Court took care of, giving the federal government and state governments the right to confiscate property even for private, non-public uses.
Yeah, we're getting awfully red over here, like more red than maybe Red China. I would take exception to one thing you said, Robin Hood type politics. Robin Hood actually stole money from the people who had stolen the tax money, and he gave it back to the taxpayers.
There really is the truth that Robin Hood stole from the lords who were stealing from their serfs. And in the case of today's version of Robin Hood, we find that those who wish to control have to recreate history to be able to tell the story. They call it Robin Hood now, but their idea now is you take the money from those who actually earned it, and you give it to the societal lords so that they can lavish it on the serfs to make the serfs ever more dependent. So it is a twisted version of Robin Hood. That's a good point. Let me read what he had to say about standing armies. Now, this first quote is been taken out of context, and the context would have explained that when Rome was a republic, that Rome did not have standing armies. That Rome became an imperial dictatorship based upon standing armies. It was Caesar's use of Julius by modern reckoning, use of a standing army, his legions, that actually, and at the time they were mostly Roman citizens, but it was his use of that standing army that caused him to transition the country from a republic to a dictatorship. And that's basically what standing armies do. They enable a country to impose dictatorial rule over their people. So let me read this statement, recognizing that he's talking about both countries during their glory days, not during their fall. Thomas Jefferson, in a letter to Thomas Cooper, 1814. The Greeks and the Romans had no standing armies, yet they defended themselves. The Greeks by their laws, the Romans by the spirit of their people. They took care to put into the hands of their rulers no such engines of oppression such as a standing army. So from Jefferson's point of view, an engine of oppression, not of liberty, not of freedom, is a standing army. Their system was to make every man a soldier and to oblige him to repair to the standard of his country whatever was reared. This made them invincible. And the same remedy will make us so, Thomas Jefferson wrote. In other words, Thomas Jefferson is telling you that America, which has the largest standing army in the world, now not by numbers of men, I think the Chinese have more men in their army than we have personnel, but in terms of just the overall size and the cost of a military, America's military costs more than the rest of the world's militaries combined. And so we have the ultimate standing army. And what Jefferson said is that's not the source of your liberty, it is the source of your oppression. And yet, through propaganda and patriotism, Americans have been beguiled into believing that their military should be honored for having provided their freedoms and their liberty. The opposite is so. We have Jason having called in from Florida. Before I read the next quote from Jefferson regarding the standing armies, I'd like to hear from you. Jason, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. It's Jason from Toronto, actually.
Yes.
I just had a hypothetical question because,
yes.
You know, I really can't I can't answer it. Because the U.S. is supposed to be, more about the people electing their government.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like they can't fire them, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
They have to just choose another one. And I was just curious, like, what would happen if, hypothetically say that the entire private sector just refused to pay or charge tax?
Yeah, isn't it interesting? You know, what's interesting, too, is the government has actually passed laws over the last 30 years that require the private sector to collect its taxes. I mean, so the burden of collecting taxes has been passed to the private sector. That's, you know, they collect, they withhold taxes from people's payroll. And corporations pay a higher tax rate in the United States than corporations do anywhere else in the world. And so you're correct. And one of the things that's also interesting here is that corporations are the ultimate source of taxation without representation. The very thing that the American Revolution was originally fought to provide was, if you're going to tax, you ought to be able to vote for your representative, and yet corporations can't vote, and yet they're taxed. As a matter of fact, taxing the source of production is unbelievably stupid. You ought not tax the source of your production. So, if corporations were to say, what you have done is destroy our ability to be productive and therefore to create an economy that is capable of creating a lifestyle and conditions in this country that are tolerable, and therefore we should just opt out of the system. This is what would happen. The executives of those companies would all be thrown in prison. That's what would happen.
That would be the end of it.
That would be the end of it. They'd all be thrown in prison. The U.S. government isn't a democracy. We're a dictatorship. We're a dictatorship.
It's already there. I mean,
yes.
If they couldn't organize something like that, in theory, if something like that could be pulled off, you could bring the government down without shedding any blood, right?
That is correct. Obama recently said, just within the last week, through the NSA, says, the NSA is not spying on ordinary Americans. What he's inferring here is that you don't have to spy on ordinary Americans, because ordinary Americans aren't taking the time to think through the issues. They're not opposed to what their government is doing. And so the average American is just going along for the ride, or is part of the problem. It's the people who stand up and say what you've just said. We ought not engender our own demise. We ought not contribute to our own destruction. And it's those people like you, Jason, who are willing and able to say that kind of thing, and I know that you don't live in the United States, you live in Toronto, but the NSA is watching you too. And it's those kinds of people that our government fears. We are the new enemy of our government, those who are encouraging people to know the truth and to think about these issues.
Yeah, okay, so, thanks very much.
Yeah, good point, Jason. Let me read the next statement from Thomas Jefferson. This was to David Humphreys, written in 1789. There are instruments so dangerous to the rights of the nation, and which place them so totally at the mercy of their governments and their governors, whether legislative or executive, should be restrained from keeping such instruments on foot. But in well-defined classes, such an instrument is a standing army. Jefferson viewed the standing army, second only to currency manipulation by banks, as the single greatest threat to this country. He said, "I do not like in the new federal constitution the omission of a Bill of Rights providing clearly, without the aid of sophisms, for the protection against standing armies." So, for Jefferson, it was not, that was a letter that he wrote to Madison in 1787. So for Jefferson, it wasn't enough that the Constitution gave the citizens the right to keep and bear arms, the kind of arms used in the militia. For Jefferson, he wanted beyond that to say that the federal government would never have a standing army. Ever. And that's something to think about, folks, because we've got the biggest in the world. Morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. There is a myth that is extraordinarily popular in America. My guess is that there's less than 1% of Americans that recognize what Jefferson said to be true, that America's military is not a source of freedom. They are not responsible for our liberty. They are not defending America. We as a nation would be better off without our military than we are with our military. And the reason that standing armies are counterproductive is they deprive individuals of liberty. They put their government in a position where there is no opportunity for individuals to redress their grievances successfully against their government, and they cause governments to act improperly, to intervene where they ought not go. For example, invading Afghanistan, invading Iraq, bombing Libya, wanting to bomb Syria. We get involved in things we ought not be involved in at great expense both in blood and coin. Here's another quote from Thomas Jefferson. "Nor is it conceived needful or safe that a standing army should be kept in a time of peace." Thomas Jefferson, First Annual Message, 1801. You see, standing armies do not protect countries. The U.S. military has never protected America. The only battle and the only war that you could even remotely say that the American military fought to protect the American homeland would be the War of 1812. And there was only one battle where a quasi-standing army was used. It was in the defense of Washington. And the moment the British attacked, they turned and ran, and the British destroyed Washington. They did not fight successfully to defend any aspect of America. That war was ultimately won by private militias. Every other war that America has fought, it has not fought to defend America. There was no invader of America that it defended America against. And the reality is, if Americans simply had the right to keep and bear arms in an unrestricted fashion, it would be impossible for any nation on earth to invade and occupy this country. That's what the Bill of Rights intended. That's why it speaks of keeping and bearing arms in the sense of a militia and in relationship to freedom. And yet America has gone the opposite direction. Not only do we have the most expensive military on earth, not only do we use our military more aggressively than any nation on earth, we have so manipulated the truth that we hold gala celebrations to our military right in front of the Jefferson Memorial, not recognizing that he warned us against this and was wholly opposed to it. Jefferson wrote, this is Jefferson's reply to Lord North's proposition in 1775. He wrote, standing armies are inconsistent with a people's freedom, and they are subversive. The spirit of this country is totally adverse to a large military force, Thomas Jefferson wrote to Chandler Price in 1807. He's pretty consistent, isn't he, Larry?
Yes, he is, and he's right about it. And, you know, sadly, you're right about the fact that probably less than 1% of the people realize that a standing army is in opposition to our own freedom. It'll be used against us, ultimately.
Yes, yes. And, you know, the first half of this program, Larry, is set up typically to review the news. And this is a derivative of the news because America is threatening to use its army again in an inappropriate way. It's military again in an inappropriate way.
Very, very, very inappropriate way. Look, you've got these rebels over here now. I'm reading a story where they dismembered a little girl alive with a frame saw.
Yeah.
You know, and these are the people that we're supporting.
The most gruesome picture that I've seen here recently is a Christian girl in Syria that these same rebels not only killed, but they took a cross and they drove it through her heart after writing Arabic slogans in her forehead and on her chest with a knife. I mean, we're talking about the most barbaric savages on earth. And America was going to bomb the Assad regime as a result on behalf of these savages. And so it's the inappropriate use of our military that is creating the mess that we find ourselves in. So I thought maybe there was no better time to help to shatter this myth that we are actually better off without our military than we are with our military. And it's not only costing us $650 billion a year, it's also costing us our very freedoms and is the most destructive force in the world today. I'm Yada. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break.